This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 319 for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Back again is Miss Megan Townsend. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I've had a great week. I've had some pretty epic events happen online. And I want to start the show off on a positive note because I've got a funny feeling after a little pre-show banter with you that when we do start talking about Game of Thrones, the grumpy might be hitting the fan.
Yeah.
At some point. I've been trying really hard to have a balanced opinion, and I just don't think I can do it. So we're gonna get into that a little bit later. But first, I want to thank my friend Pixel Riffs, Johnny, who I do the Spawn Chunks podcast with, because I was doing a stream the other day on Twitch. I was streaming some Minecraft. I was actually a double stream. I was streaming with Fixit412, who is a member of the Realm of Vastin server that I play on. And Johnny sent a raid, which is when he dumps all of the people that were watching his stream into mine. It was 500 people.
That's amazing.
It was nuts. So many people were following and saying hello and chiming in that I could not keep up. I kind of had to do like a blanket thank you to like everybody in the chat. It was like, guys, thank you. This is amazing. Because the follow noises in my ear were just like every 60 seconds. It was just like ding. They're not 60 seconds, like once every second. It was like ding, ding. It was really cool. And now a lot of people couldn't stay because they had already been hanging out with Johnny on stream for like 2 hours or 3 hours or something like that. So they were kind of done, but they said that they would be back. So it was really cool. And I ended up keeping, I think, about 120 or so people were still in the chat when I ended the stream, which is a stream high for me. So that's the first time I've had that many people like stick around for the duration of the broadcast. So it was a couple of milestones. It was like the most at one time. It was the most sustained viewers. Largest raid, like there was all kinds of things. Twitch in the dashboard afterwards had told me like, hey, these are all the different things that you just hit, like achievements unlocked sort of idea. And it was really, really fun. And I wanted to again thank Johnny for the raid and just to all the people that were there. If you happen to listen to this show as well, because we were talking about it in the chat, just thank you. It was a lot of fun. I kind of wish I was able to be more engaging on the stream, but Fixit was on the stream with me, so he and I were talking, and so I found it very challenging to talk to Fixit and try to read the chat room at the same time.
Like, yeah, I bet
it was really, really hard. I've done some live podcasting with live chat rooms, and it's okay, but it has to be the right kind of show. Like, if you're not a show that constantly looks for engagement from the chat room and use that in the context of the podcast, then you're just going to be distracted. Like, you're trying to listen to your co-host make a point while you read the chat room looking for something to contribute. Like, I find it very challenging. And so one ends up losing out. Either I don't look at the chat room as much, or I'm not listening to the co-host as much. And one I feel is not polite. So I try to focus on that. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. And I want to point people towards Fixit. And that is youtube.com/fixit412. That's F-I-X-X-I-T-T 412. He is, we'll say, the helmsman of the Realm of Vastin server. And his stream would likely be on YouTube. So you'd also be able to see what we were doing from his perspective as well, which was really cool.
That's neat.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We worked on the giant frost tree build that I was building over there. This season on the Realm of Vastin, and we started filling it in. Like, I've made the kind of the bones of it, and now we're kind of filling in the bottom. And we spent the entire stream, and we only got like the bottom chunk of it done.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like, out of like 14 rings of tree, we got one finished. Like, it was, and it's not even finished. It was like partially finished, but it's a fun, chill thing to do. I'm looking to do more of it because It's not a lot of thinking about what I'm doing. I'm just placing the same block over and over again. We're just filling it in with like a birch texture, which on the texture pack on that server is a different color. It's gray.
Okay.
But what it means is that it's very easy. Once Fixit took off, he had to go get his kids. But once I was alone on the stream, it was very easy to talk with the chat and do what I was doing because I wasn't like trying to invent the build. Like I was basically coloring. It's like paint by number, right? So you just like fill in this spot here with all wood. Okay. And so it was just doing that and then talking with the chat and just, you know, chilling out and stuff like that. But again, it was a super, super fun time. And it was a fun highlight of me being a fairly new streamer because I've not been doing this seriously for more than 6 months, maybe 8 months. So to hit those kind of numbers and have that kind of positive feedback from people was just really cool. It was an excellent way to start the week.
That's good.
Yeah. Have you ever done streaming? I know that you do YouTube videos, but they're all edited.
Yeah, I haven't. I've wanted to try streaming. A couple of my friends do streaming, actually. My friend Vanessa does streaming. She's, what's her name? On Luxurious Lady on Twitch. And she does a lot of, like, randomizers. So she was doing Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, but with a randomizer. So every time you went to the world map or every time you left a level, you would be taken to a random place that may not fit the same pattern that the original game would have. So you have to really know the game to do it. So it's very complicated. But so she's crazy fun to watch. And my friend Kyle does a lot of random games. He's done a variety of stuff. I believe his fiance Becca streams as well, but I actually don't know her Twitch name. She kind of more does it for fun. I think Kyle is an affiliate now. Is that what it is?
Yep. I'm an affiliate as well. Yeah. I can't remember the exact criteria, but
so
yeah,
I'm not sure of the tiers. Like what are the tiers for it?
It's there's like a base streamer. I think, I don't remember what that's called. And then there's affiliate is the next level, which is a broad level. And then partner is the one where you have to have like 100 consistent viewers every time you stream for a month. You have to have X amount of followers, and there's a certain amount of, you also have to have a number of people actually chatting. Like even if 100 people showed up and watched but didn't say anything, that's not enough. Like you have to actually have some engagement, and you also have to stream X amount of hours in 30 days consistently. So like there's a certain criteria. Well, for example, Johnny Pixel Riffs is applying for partner. He's been trying to apply for partner now for a couple of months, but the problem is that there's a bottleneck where the applications are just not getting processed either properly or fast enough or whatever, and Johnny has not been able to get any information outside of the other day where he said that he submitted an application and he received confirmation that the application was received, which he did not even get before.
Okay, well that's good.
Yeah, but he more than meets the criteria.
You're right. Yeah.
So, but I think it's just a matter of like, there's just so many people out there throwing their spaghetti noodle at the wall, trying to be a streamer. And I'm not poo-pooing it. It's a lot of fun and it's provided me with a fantastic community. And it's a nice compliment to podcasting, to Minecraft with the Spawn Chunks podcast. Like there's a lot of really positive things that come out of it, but I can understand Like, would I want to work at Twitch in a capacity where I'd be, you know, dealing with who gets to be partner and who doesn't? Nope. Not in a million years.
Yeah, like that would be...
The data must be out of this world. Like, it must be so hard to sort through. And I feel like while it's super, super slow, I feel like the fact that they're going through people is probably good, because the opposite of true is true of YouTube, and YouTube is seeing some major flaws being pointed out in their like copyright system and all that kind of stuff.
I heard about that with Alistair, and I were actually talking about that was it Pixel Riffs?
No, it was Mumbo Jumbo.
It was Mumbo. Yeah. And it's broken.
Yeah.
Holy crap. We were watching a couple of videos. We were hanging out the other day at his place, and we're watching some videos on like Minecraft in the brain. The YouTube copyright system and how like YouTuber, like unfortunately I'm not big enough to have this problem yet, but I'm kind of afraid for if it ever happens, because if someone decides, oh, hey, I want to copyright this claim, even though it's like a Creative Commons piece, and even if you pay for a license for something, like I know there's another guy I don't really follow him for anything, but it's a video that came up on my feed, as like suggested, and like, you know, my whole channel was copywritten, or my whole channel was copyright claimed, and it was this one company that claimed the song that he bought a license to from this artist directly. And his artist was like, yeah, I get in touch with my management. Management gave him a license that he paid $50 for infinite use of the song. And this one company kept trying to claim it, because it was on their website as well. So the website kept trying to claim it, even though he had a license.
Yeah.
And it was just a mess. And it's, there's no way for content creators, if they dispute the claim, if the person making the claim says, no, I'm still going to make this claim that you're copywriting something, you get a copyright strike in your channel, and you only get three of those before your whole channel is gone, donezo.
Yeah.
And there's no middleman. There's no median. Like, YouTube is not acting as a median. The only person who gets to make the decision of yes or no, this is copyright claimed, is the person who's making the claim.
Yeah.
Even if it's a false claim, and there's no system in place for false claims to be penalized.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Which is a problem. That's a huge problem.
Well, and it's also opportunistic. Like, Mumbo Jumbo has got 3+ million followers.
Yeah.
He's been using the same intro song for as long as I've been following him, which is at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? But now that he's at this 3 million point, this company is claiming. And the thing is, like, it's not even that they're claiming the song. The song he used has a sample, and the artist that he got the song from used the sample. And the sample in the 4 second clip, which I'm not even sure how long the sample is within that 4 seconds, is what this copyright company is, or this company is claiming copyright on. Like, it's a pure, someone sent an algorithm out looking for this bit of music that they own. And I'm sure, you know, and this is anecdotal, I don't know, I'm being a little bit defensive, that they're not looking for all uses of this sample. They're looking for who's using this sample that has more than 2 million followers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, who's making the most money? Who can we, because while they're making this claim, the money's in limbo. And if they win, then they get...
I thought the money was going directly to them, whoever made the copyright claim.
Well, I was watching one of Mumbo's videos, and he said that during the dispute, the money is not sent anywhere. It's in escrow, which is still problematic. This is the guy's living. Like, this is...
Right.
It's like your paycheck being on hold. You know, like, if this... You know, and they have the power as a large company that is auto-flagging 400, 600, 800 videos of his... where he can't keep up. Plus, like you said, he doesn't want to jump on the gun. I really hope at this point that he's lawyered up. Like, I really hope at some point that he's contacted a legal, you know, representative to get some advice on how to proceed. Because the company is just, it's an automated system. It's not that there's somebody on the other end in front of a computer making these claims. It's a program. Like, on a Sunday morning, he had something like 400 claims in like a couple hours. Like, that's not a human.
So, you know, wild.
Like, it's just, but it's the thing, like, they're just looking at him like, well, here's how we can potentially make some money. You know, it's like, how can we, you know, with no regard for the person's livelihood, not to mention that even if he's using this clip, like, it's not. The person that should be being under scrutiny is the person that sold it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's the artist that made the song. If they didn't have permission to use the sample, then they shouldn't have used the sample. They're the one that's at fault. You know, like, more due diligence, you know, on YouTubers and people that are content creators that are looking for music. I use royalty-free music. I use the same royalty-free music that a lot of other people use. It's a little overused. iComTech, Kevin McLeod, we always credit him at the end of the show, but that's the agreement. He's like, use it for free, put my link at the end of your thing and say it on, you know, and use it, you know. I don't think even in my, in the user agreement that I have to say it on the podcast, I do it because I'm an artist and I want to.
Yeah.
But the agreement is that this particular link and the legal language and the sharing license has to be linked on the show notes. And so I do that. Like, you know, there's a, at the bottom of every Citadel Cafe, there's always like a music composed by Kevin MacLeod. There's a link to his website, and all the copyright information is there. Mm-hmm. Same with my, because I use the same intro music or versions of the intro music, different portions of it, for the Citadel Minecraft series that I put on YouTube. And same idea, if you scroll all the way to the bottom of my notes on, or my, what's it called? The description. Underneath the YouTube video. The very bottom, it's like intro, and it gives the title of the piece and the link to the license, and then it's by Kevin MacLeod. And then underneath that is the outro piece. Same idea. It's a different song, but it's still Kevin MacLeod, and here's the link, and here's the thing. So if people, the idea is that if people want to go and listen to his music, then they can go do that. And then, you know, and he has stuff that you can buy from him too. So that's just his way of advertising. He's like, here's a bunch of free music that I'm going to make anyway. So you use it. But if you use it, you have to point people back to my website. You know, like it's just,
yeah.
You know, it's a way, it's the way that a podcast works too. Like all the podcasts that are out there are, or not all of them, but like the way that I release my podcast is Creative Commons. Like if you can't grab it and broadcast it and pretend like it's yours. But if you want to talk about it, if you want to use a clip of it in context or review, or if you want to make fun of it, like if someone clipped you and I, you know, ranting about Game of Thrones and turned it into a song.
Like yeah, please do that. That would be
right.
I'd be so into that.
Yeah, but that's fair use, right? Like you're creating something new out of something that was just not our intention, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if we made a song and someone took that song and made it into another song, then you're having a bit of a problem, you know?
Yeah.
Like I've had some people very politely ask me about using some of my artwork, you know, on like web pages and stuff like that. And I always say no, politely. And I always say, thank you so much for writing and asking, you know, because it's so important that you know that you have to do that. And so that's awesome. And I usually say like, hey, if you want me to commission something, like, I mean, I can draw something original for you that you own and that like, it's not mine, it's 100% yours. And sometimes that conversation doesn't work out because they either don't have the budget or whatever. Mm. But other times it does. Other times people are like, yeah, okay, no, that makes sense. The only thing that's a little bit foggy and I still don't know actually how to approach it is people that want to get tattoos of my work. And that's happened at least twice now, if not three times. Two people asked, one person didn't. The person,
oh.
and so here's the fun kind of like, well, you get what you get. The person that didn't ask got a shitty tattoo. Like it
doesn't look good.
It's my artwork, but it looks terrible. And so but the problem there is that I then have to say like, hey, could you untag me? Because the conversation in the post was made it sound like provided by Joel Duggan's like no, stolen by you from Joel Duggan. I didn't give you that, and it's a terrible representation or reproduction of my work. So take my name off this. Like this is garbage. Mm. You know, I didn't say that. I'm saying that to you now because I'm sure that they don't listen. But in other cases, I can't remember her name. I want to say it was Helen. But she's in Switzerland or Sweden or something. And she commissioned me. She got an original work that she got tattooed and it looks beautiful. I shared it on Instagram a couple of years ago. Yeah. No, it's Deadpool riding a unicorn, I think. He's hugging a stuffed unicorn. And she got that tattooed and it looks wonderful. She had a very talented tattoo artist. But she, you know, she paid me professionally to draw it for her. And then somebody else wrote me and asked me if it was possible to do it, like to use the art. And I tried to pitch them on getting a commission and they said, no, I just, you know, I want to do this one. And at that point, I kind of have to say like, well, like I don't necessarily say this, but I have to think to myself, there's nothing I can do to stop them. Right.
Yeah.
Like they're going to be able to take this off. And if the tattoo artist is willing to copy it, especially if it's like, I mean, not to stereotype, but like a lot of times the emails that come in that they want to just use an image off of like ArtStation for a tattoo. Mm-hmm. It's usually from somewhere else, like Asia or South America or Europe, or it's usually another country, like non-North America.
Yeah.
So like I have got no way of telling whether this thing is ever used or not. But usually at that point, if they're like, no, I would really like to use this particular piece. And I said, well, you know, if you want to use it, then, I mean, like, I can't really stop you, but here's, you know, and sometimes I might even say, like, look, here's a link to a high-res version, and, you know, don't change it. You know, like, you know, it's like when people do get, like, lewd tattoos of Mickey Mouse. It's like, there's nothing Disney can really do, but it's just it's such a bad thing, in my opinion, that I just try to talk people out of it by saying, like, look, look, you can use this, but don't change it. Or at least, you know, like, here's a high res version. So your tattoo artist is not looking at an image on a screen, trying to figure out what line goes where. I can actually send you something where they could, if they wanted to, they could just photocopy it or something, you know, like, mm-hmm. if you're going to use it, at least make it look good. And I think the other thing I did was like, you know, at least give me the option to be tagged and promoted in a post. It's like, so if you're going to steal it, then at least put my name somewhere so that people can come and get directed by me. It's such a hard conversation. I usually, in a lot of cases, more and more lately, I've been saying no. I've just been saying, like, no, you want that for free? Then no, you can't use it. Again, I can't stop them. If they go ahead and do it and don't tell me, then sure. That is what it is. Like, it's not like I can tell them to go get it removed. It's just,
right.
You know, like, it's just, once it's done, it's done. But it's just, it's, I usually take the opportunity to then just, like, you know, try to educate people down the line, be like, actually, you know, I'm surprised that more, as popular as tattooing has become, and I see it more and more and more, I'm surprised that more tattoo artists don't refuse, won't be just like,
well, a lot of them do, actually, at least a lot of the local ones here. I did a lot of research before. I mean, I got, you know, one of my tattoos is one that I found online, but I found the one on my forearm. I think you've seen it before. It's like a little crescent moon thing. And so she said that was like, it was a blog, a Tumblr blog that I found. And she was like, I'm making these for free to put out into the world anyway. If you want to tattoo them, go for it. I'd love to see them. So she just kind of gave that permission. I was great, cool. Nice. So I got that one tattooed anyway. It was like, sweet. But I did a lot of research before I got a tattoo, and a lot of artists will not copy another artist's work.
Mm.
And a lot of artists will prefer to, you can bring an inspiration. You can bring in a photo for inspiration, but if an artist is like a good artist, or someone who has a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Respect for other artists, they will not carbon copy someone else's work on your body. They will, they're like, okay, great, this is a great starting point, let's come up with a draft together, and they'll do like a mock-up for you. And honestly, it's better that way a lot of the time. An artist will know what will translate better to the skin, first of all, because they've been doing it for years. Hopefully they've been doing it for years, but a lot of, like, even you know, assistant or oh god, what's English is really hard for me today. What's that word?
I'm thinking, I'm having a brain fart, and I'm remembering that Sonia might have been the name of the client. And I've got a funny feeling, the way that she talked about her tattoo artist, I feel like she might have even spoken to her tattoo artist first. I mean, it's like, hey, I really like this guy's art. If I get him to do a commission, will you tattoo it on me? Like, it seemed like there was this symbiotic relationship. Like, she kind of...
That's sounds like a good conversation to have, to make sure that's okay. Going into an artist and being like, I want this on me. It's like, well, did you check with the other artist? And no, we don't really do that. And I know there's one girl locally named Helena Darling, and she will not tattoo anyone else's work. She just refuses flat out, and that's like one of her main things. She's like, I will not, because it's a disrespect, it's a disservice to the other artist, unless you got it expressly commissioned for it. Even then, she's a little wary of it, because it's not her work, right? And like, a lot of tattoo artists, for them, it is art. It's like the same way that you make art and put it in a digital format, her art is a physical canvas, so like a human canvas. And she wants to make sure that it's her design and her art. And she's very good. She's very, very good at it. Some artists are a bit more relaxed, but that's a conversation you have to have I'm actually about tattoos and finding tattoos and speaking with your artist. It's old and it's crappy. Please don't judge me. I was just getting used to doing videos. But a lot of, I actually got a comment recently. So like, this was actually really helpful. Thank you. So I'm happy that people are finding it and looking into it, because I did like step-by-step, like here's all the research that I did. I've reached the hell out of artists. Like, it's to the point now with my two tiny little tattoos, if someone walks in with a Helena Darling piece, I know it's a Helena Darling piece because I've done a lot of research on her.
Oh,
I've done a lot of research on a lot of the other artists in the city. So I can usually pinpoint, oh, that's so-and-so from this shop and that's so-and-so from this shop. Sometimes I'm not sure, and some people take on a really similar style, or they tattoo in a particular style that's very similar to another artist. And I'm just like, who did that for you? And then I'm like, okay, I was just, it was either one of those two people, and I'm was one of them. So I'm usually not wrong. I don't know how I'm able to keep that information in my brain, but I am.
That's funny. Moving on to the main discussion this week, we are going to talk about Game of Thrones. A moment of silence for Game of Thrones, as this is season 8, episode 6, The Iron Throne. It is the season and series finale. It is done. You will no longer get the very cool Game of Thrones opening sequence on your Sunday night television watch, which is it's a sad thing. It's a sad, sad thing. And we're going to get into our thoughts on the episode and probably as the season as a whole as we kind of wrap things up. But I do have a bit of a summary here from Wikipedia that I'm going to read to you folks. Once again, spoiler zone. If you have not seen it, what have you been doing?
Really though,
come back to us later after you've prepared yourself. I find that this is something I have also had to do. Even though I've seen the episode and I have other favorite podcasts I listen to that I know are going to talk about it, I kind of have to be in the right mood to listen to them before.
Yes.
Like I kind of have to mentally prep. So I'm giving everybody that's listening at home the opportunity to mentally prep before we get into this. But to summarize, after King's Landing is nearly destroyed, Grey Worm executes all captured soldiers on Daenerys' orders. I'm putting a question mark here because this is what the Wikipedia said. I saw him kill one.
Well, there was a whole like lineup of them, right? Yeah. You see him kill one and there's like a line of them.
Yeah, but there were six of them. Like it wasn't like there was, well, I know it felt very finite on the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tyrion finds Jaime and Cersei dead in the Red Keep ruins. Daenerys rallies the Unsullied and Dothraki, declaring that she will liberate the entire world. Denouncing Daenerys' tyranny, Tyrion resigns as Hand and then is imprisoned for treason to await execution. Fearing Daenerys may kill Jon and Sansa, Arya and Tyrion tell Jon that Westeros' fate lies with him. Jon confronts Daenerys but is unable to halt her destructive path and he kills her. Grieved by her death, Drogon, the dragon, melts the Iron Throne and then carries her body away. Tyrion is freed and encourages that future monarchs be chosen by Westerosi aristocrats rather than the familial succession. Apart from Sansa asserting an independent North, the Westerosi leaders unanimously proclaim Bran Stark as Bran the Broken, ruler of the Six Kingdoms. Bran appoints Tyrion as Hand and sentences Jon to the Night's Watch to appease Daenerys' followers. Grey Worm and the Unsullied sail for Naas. Tyrion recognizes the King's small council in Brienne, Bronn, Davos, and Sam to rebuild King's Landing. Sansa is crowned queen in the north. Arya sets sail to explore west of Westeros. And at Castle Black, Jon rejoins Tormund and Ghost and is accompanying the wildlings as they head north of the Wall, which is like the last kind of like ride into the sunset sort of shot for the series. Mm. I guess we can start with the technical stuff to kind of warm up our brains. 13.6 million viewers suppressing episode 5 or surpassing, excuse me, episode 5, The Bells, which is last week, making the finale the most watched television episode in HBO history. If you add the additional 5.7 million streaming platforms, it brings the total to 19.3 million people watching that episode. And I think those numbers are pretty solid now because I think the numbers were coming in Tuesday and I looked these up today. So nearly 20 million people watched the last episode of Game of Thrones. Reviews on some publications have been a bit soft, in my opinion. Only I think the New York Times was just like, that was crap. they were more eloquent than that, but the reviewer at the New York Times didn't like it. Richard Roper, writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, said that it was melancholy, bittersweet, twist-filled, and at times surprisingly humorous. Overall, was a solid and largely satisfying wrap-up to one of the most exciting and enthralling TV series ever. I'm with him on the exciting and enthralling TV series, but I'm not sure what finale he watched because it wasn't the same one that I did. Hank Struver of the Washington Post wrote that in this episode, the series sailed and it sometimes trotted off to a noble and perhaps anticlimactic end. And I brought these in on purpose because anticlimactic, melancholy, bittersweet were words that were used in almost every review that I could see. For whatever reason, these big, the big kind of publications were really hesitant to swing a big stick at HBO. I don't know why. I realize it's subjective, and yes, like at some point you're not gonna please everybody. Not everybody is gonna be happy with who ends up on the Iron Throne. But my grievances at large are less with who ended up on the throne and more how everything came to be and the end, right?
I said the same thing. A lot of people were like, I'm really disappointed with the outcome and how it happened and who they chose and everything that went down. I'm like, I'm not. Like, an ending is an ending, and at least it ended, and it ended in a semi-decent way. I'm not happy with where our chess pieces ended up. If you watched the last episode we did together, I talked about chess pieces.
Yeah.
Watched, listened to. I did it. I did the thing that I said I would never do.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
I'm gonna call myself out because that's annoying. So if you listened to the last one we did, we talked about chess pieces. I'm not mad with where they ended up. I'm not mad with the pieces that were left on the board. I'm mad with the way they were moved around to get there. That's kind of just. Honestly, I don't think Bran was the worst choice for King, but it just, there was a weird disconnect because like earlier in the season or like earlier at the end of last season or something, he said something about like, I don't really want anymore. I don't really want to do anything. I don't really want anything. I'm barely even human right now. I'm the three-eyed raven. And then when Tyrion was saying like, will you become king? And like, he was like, why do you think I came all this way? It's like, but you didn't want anything. What are you saying?
It was
just.
And it's the only time that Bran smiles in the last two seasons.
Yeah.
And it, so you mean, but I mean, you don't smile unless you have feelings. And if you're going to portray this weird, you know, future seeing being as unfeeling and wooden, then commit. Like, don't flip flop. If it's going to be, if he's going to be awkward and annoying, then he's going to be awkward and annoying the whole way through. And it felt, I mean, I don't know if some sort of underlying reading between the lines that they're supposed to be telling us that Bran played the Game of Thrones and won.
That didn't read very well.
Then you did a piss poor job of communicating that to the viewers. Like, I shouldn't have to read between the pages to get that, if that's what your mission was, right?
Mm-hmm.
I still stand by the fact that if they had portrayed Bran as still Bran, like still give him a personality, still make him their brother and a family member and someone that's happy to see Jon or really worried about Sansa or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Someone that mourns Hodor, like just give him something and then maybe have those visions that he's been having be something that tortures him, that confuses him, that he needs to talk to people about. Like, give him relationships with people. And then I start to think, oh, wait a minute. That would make sense. If he was depending on people and helping people this whole time, you know, and wanting nothing for himself, right? Then I can understand why Tyrion might say, you know what? You deserve it. Because in my mind, he's done nothing to deserve it. He literally sits in a chair and does nothing for seasons at a time. And it doesn't really, he communicates information to us the viewer. Like, that's his whole purpose, is to give information that we would not have as either a reader or, you know, in the books or as a viewer. That's his purpose. But he doesn't do anything in the actual context of the world of Westeros, right? He doesn't contribute to doing any of the, like, in the, he's bait in the battle of the their time. He's meat on a stick. Like, it's just like, God, it doesn't feel deserved. Now, from a technical standpoint, breaking the wheel, he can't have children, so there cannot be a family successor. The fact that he can see the past and the future means that as a decision maker, probably pretty good, right? The fact that he wanted to contribute and save the world. He's not an evil being. He was trying to stop the White Walkers. Like, you know, like, as little as he contributed, at least he was trying to contribute. But all of this goes towards, like, well, what was the point of revealing Jon's true heritage? Like, if he's destined for the throne, because if he's on the throne, he knew he was going to be there. He said the line. Then what was the point of revealing Jon's true heritage?
I think it was, I mean, like, you said the same thing about, like, you know, to Theon, he's like, everything you ever did was to make you be exactly where you are right now.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, I think the thing with Bran is that he's pretty good at not meddling with the timeline. Like, I think he kind of understands that, like, everything needs to happen in a certain order for things to be as they're meant to be in the future. But again, I don't like how everything played out. Like, it felt, honestly, I tweeted this, and I'm going to reiterate it again. My expectations were so low, I almost liked it.
Yeah.
I a lot of people said that was really funny too. I was actually really proud of that one, but I don't know. My expectations were so low in how this is all going to play out that when it came to the end of it, I was like, well, okay, that works, I guess. Yeah.
Given,
I'm good with that.
Given the corner that they painted themselves into this season, like, forget that we don't like the corner. We're here. We have to accept the corner, right? We saw episode 5. This is where we landed.
Yeah.
I think they did a pretty good job of wrapping things up.
I agree. Yeah, right? It wasn't, I mean, it could have been way worse.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, it could have been much, much worse. I agree.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the complaints that I have are less about the finale in terms of who ended up where, and more about the whole season as to, like, where and how people ended up where they're and where they ended up. So, like, for example, I don't think Jon would want to be king or like to be king, but one of the things that Tyrion says in the episode, which is almost directly aimed at the viewers, is just like, you know, no one is going to be happy. No one's going to be really happy with what turns out, but no one's going to be really upset either. And that's okay. That means that we're probably a good place to end, or something along those lines. Basically telling the audience, you're not going to get the ending you want, but you're going to be okay with it. Like, it was pretty straight out there. But, like, I don't think that Jon would want to be or enjoy being king, but I think he would do it out of duty, right? If that was how it ended. And I'd be okay with that, knowing that he's there, but he isn't there because he tried to be there the whole time. He's there because he had to do the right thing at the right time, which is arguably the only thing he has done all season. The one thing that he did is arguably the biggest thing that anybody has done. It was hard to watch. Like, you saw it coming, and you know why he's going to meet Daenerys before he stabs her. You know it's going to be him. I was hoping that he wasn't going to be able to do it, and that Arya was going to be the one. So my hope was that Jon was going to be king, that Arya was going to be the one that ended up killing Daenerys, which would make sense for even Arya's end storyline. Like, if she killed Daenerys, then she would have to leave. Like, she would have to flee, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so she would just like, that's fine. I don't want to hang with you folks anyway. I'm out.
Yeah.
See you later.
Peace out. Bye.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I get also the fact that you don't necessarily want to give the Night King and Daenerys to Arya. It kind of puts everything on her shoulders.
Yeah.
As far as like a not a linchpin, but like a a pivoting point of the plot. Like, it all hangs on Arya if you do that.
Yeah.
But at that point, like, it made the sense. And they even did that with the way that they filmed it. Like, they I mean, I understand now that it was probably their attempt at misdirection was to make you think that Arya is really mad and she's going to try and kill her because she saw the mom and child burned in the streets and all this kind of stuff. And really all it does is just make her go talk to Jon. But the death scene with Daenerys, like, she is off her rocker. It's a different Daenerys. It's like night and day, including the wardrobe change. Like, she literally was in a white outfit 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
She went white, she went maroon, and now it's black. It's like Darth Vader overnight. And while I don't like the pacing at how fast that happened, again, mm-hmm. we have to kind of say, all right, accept it. We're here. She's done the whole burning everybody thing. And the way that she talks to Jon, if it had taken her longer to get there, then I would be on board. Because the way that the dialogue was that, like, I have it. I'm so happy, Jon. All I have to do is free the world. And it was just like, you have lost your marbles. Like, she's not angry. She's just like, she's happy at her, like, epiphany. And like, that's the scary part. It's like, she thinks this is the new normal. And that's where you're just like, oh no, this is
my dear.
Yeah. Like, this is off the deep end, you know, like, well, because I mean, it has, like, fascist, you know, like, all kinds of problems, like, written all over it. Right. I mean, it's definitely a reference to, you know, like, to all the major world wars and stuff like that. So, I mean, and again, like, that kind of stuff is good. It's just that you don't, if you look at it in the context of this season, it's too fast. Like, it doesn't make any sense that she's there that quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and that's the honestly, like, with the way everything played out, it's not what played out that is upsetting me. It's the speed at which everything played out. Like, the story, it's still at its core a decent story. We still needed at least 2 other seasons between that one and this one to get to the point that we got to, because the sudden, like, go from, like, the end of season 7 to this one, and even, like, within, like, 2 episodes, she was suddenly batshit crazy. And it was just like, if she was going to be going nuts, and, like, and people are like, if you weren't paying attention, if you didn't realize that she was gradually going crazy, it's like, no, like, she was always a spitfire. I understand that. Like, I think I said that last episode too. Like, she's always been hot-headed, and she's always been very, very quick to anger. But at the beginning of the season, everyone saw her and John together, and she was happy. Everyone's like, they're actually really good together. He balances her out. He chills her out a little bit. And it was like, just instantly she's incensed and she's just wild and nuts. And credit to Emilia Clarke. She's an amazing actor and she managed to pull it off. But it's just the pacing and the editing in which it just made it feel really choppy and disjointed and disconnected. And that's, I think, the issue that I'm having with the whole season in its entirety. It's disjointed.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's stitched together. It's like, all right, let's just slap some things on a board and call it good. Like, that's it. It's no, yeah. you gotta stitch it together nicely. And the editing was not super great this time around either.
Oh my gosh. There was so many, I was bored. There was lots of places in the finale where I'm just like, why are we still watching this happen? Like, I mean, I get that it's the finale and there's kind of like this slower pace and you're trying to, like, you know, give everybody their last kind of like ride off into the sunset. But it's just like, for example, you know, since we're talking about Daenerys dying, Drogon senses trouble and comes up to see in the open throne room that Daenerys is dead. The last person she was alive with is Jon. His dagger is in her chest. I mean, Drogon, like a dog, kind of nudges her and realizes that she's down.
That was actually really sad. I felt more for the dragon in that minute than I did for anybody else.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a problem when your dragon has more character arc.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, but there's an issue.
But then he has the philosophical no to melt the throne.
Because I mean, I wasn't because mad about
script,
it.
Because the script says so. Like it's
the script said so. But I also
if he's going to melt,
dragons are smart.
I guess they are. I guess they're pinpoint smart. Because I mean, he didn't burn John, which is you thought was going to happen. Which they made you think was going to happen. He didn't burn anything else. Like, I would have been a little bit more okay with it if he had burned the entire throne room. Like, if John had to run for cover and he brought the whole thing down in rage, you know, fine. Go for it, you know. And in the process, melting the throne, it is the only thing. And we just watched this dragon lay waste to a city in the last episode. He took down the Red Keep in like 3 or 4 swipes. We watched towers melt with one breath. It took him a bloody eon to melt this freaking throne. Like, it was like, okay, I get it. He's going to melt it. It's melting. It's melting very slowly. It's still melting. Cut to the next shot. More dragon fire. We're still
now,
here.
To play devil's advocate for a second, do you think that it's because the Red Keep was made of stone and this was made of metal? That's what I was thinking initially.
Yeah, maybe.
I agree with you. It was.
Yeah. Here's the problem. Because of the way that the season has gone and because of how the writing is, I don't trust them. So now I'm seeing all these things that they're doing in this, like, we don't have the material to fill this episode. We still need it to be 90 minutes or however long it was. I don't remember. So we're going to do all this kind of stuff. And it's like, anytime that there was something that was just too long or repetitive, or the dialogue was just like, no, we already did that. Things that you could edit out of the ending and it affects absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
And then you're just like, that is time and money that you could have spent writing better material and filming more character development or better explanations, you know, and just have these things be just a little bit tighter rather than just like, well, we're going to pump this out because we have to get to this last end point. To go back to what you said about season 7, I think if I was to armchair quarterback this, it would be, remove the storyline from season 7 where they go north to get the zombie.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's dumb. The only thing that happens there that's important is that the Night King gets a dragon. Right? That's the only way. It's the only thing that happens there that is of any consequence. Because they go, they get the zombie, they bring it down to Cersei, and she still doesn't really care. So it was pointless, right?
Yeah.
But if you move that, remove that, and then you put the first 3 episodes of season 8 at the end of season 7. So like the battle for Winterfell is done at the end of season 7. I don't know how you get the White Walkers across the wall. Maybe they just climb it. I really don't know. A technicality that it's not really key to my point. My point is about pacing. Because then you'd have this entire season. And don't make this 6 episodes. Make this 10. Make this 10 episodes of the White Walkers are dead. How do we deal with Cersei? And have the entire season be about that. You might be able to get us in a satisfying way to where we are now. You know, like instead of 6 or 8 key things happening per episode, it would be 2. You know, you'd have some time. You know, you'd have some pacing and stuff like that. I want to try and balance the conversation out with some cool moments. I really, as I guess ham-fisted as it was, it was still a pretty cool moment when Daenerys got off of Drogon and she was walking to the top of the stairs and the dragon spread his wings and she has her Maleficent moment. Like,
oh, that was actually so nice. As soon as I watched it, I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
The cinematography in this was amazing, I will say. Yeah. Like, it looked, throughout the whole season, it looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that minute.
Yeah, I don't want to disparage any of the, you know, the people that have put their blood, sweat, and tears into making this entire series or this show or this finale. I'm putting it all on the people that wrote it. My dislike and it's all about the bones that were laid, not the execution, like not the technical stuff. Cause other, like everything else was fine. I mean, maybe a couple of water bottles behind some chairs that I saw. But, But yeah, at some point I kind of get the feeling. I'm getting the feeling that a lot of people got pretty fed up. And
Yep.
no one's saying anything because I think they're just being smart professional people and want to continue to work. And I don't think they're voicing too much.
Yep.
But I'm curious in 5 to 10 years when we get the real making of HBO's Game of Thrones, documentary. I'm very curious to see what people have to say. But no, the other shot that I thought was really cool was when Jon was approaching the throne room where Daenerys was, and you couldn't see anything. It just looked like rubble. And then Drogon got out from underneath the snow. Like, that was
Oh, that was cool
wicked.
too. It was like
Yeah.
surprise dragon.
Oh, and just so calmly kind of looking at Jon like, oh, yeah, it's you.
It's you.
Cool. It's
Hey,
all
okay.
good. Yeah, I'm going back to
Go
sleep
ahead,
now. Yeah.
bye. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, like, it was mostly. That moment was mostly cat, but a little bit dog.
Yes.
The when
Yeah.
Daenerys died, it was all dog. Like, it's
Yeah.
very much golden retriever sort of moment. But that moment of like, I'm gonna lift my head up from my nap, make sure that you are who I think you are, and then I'm gonna go back to sleep. That to me was very cat.
Yes.
But like stuff like that, I thought was still really cool. And as much as I disliked what she was saying in terms of like, oh gosh, Daenerys, you're so wrong. This is all so wrong for you. It was still a very cool speech, like a very cool, powerful moment,
Yes.
for
Yeah.
her to be at the top of the stairs and addressing the Dothraki and the Unsullied and having still have all those followers, despite the fact that I mean, she's lost the Northmen. She's lost any kind of support from the North. All of her local Westerosi cabinet are all just like, you nuts, see ya. But the Unsullied and the Dothraki are still 100% loyal. The warriors, right? Like the people that respond to power are also 100% loyal.
Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, I feel like we're kind of dwelling on a lot on Daenerys and Jon. Last point that I had is that death scene with Jon and Cersei, I mean, it was a really, really powerful moment. I wish it had been Jaime and Cersei. That is what I wanted for them was Cersei to die that way, like in the arms of Jaime.
Again, yeah, I really would have liked to have Jamie have a full circle redemption arc. Well, it kind of was a little bit. He did come full circle where in the end he went back to Cersei, but I would have liked for him to have been like, listen, let's, not to see her suffer, so like just put her out of her misery. Also, I saw a really hilarious meme when Tyrion was down there and he found they moved like 7 feet to the left, they would have been fine.
No,
There was no rubble in that area. They would have been A-okay. So, yeah, I
Hey,
think that's
look,
just like set
at
continuity and
least the
stuff,
hand,
but
at least somebody's hand didn't move. Like, at least it wasn't
yeah,
like,
it's true.
they're still alive or one of them is still alive. Like that. And
Yeah.
also, they didn't appear to be under enough rubble to really kill them. Like, he moved 4 bricks and found both of them. And one final thing before we move on from Daenerys, and it actually has to do more with Drogon than Daenerys, but like he picks her up and he flies off with her, and that's the last that we see of her. After all of this, we don't get any kind of like funeral. The Unsullied don't. There's no like special memory of her. Like it's just she's just gone, and I feel like that robs the viewers as much as it does the people that followed her.
Yeah, no, I part of me was thinking he was just so like so grieved that he was just like, I gotta take her away from everything that's bad.
Yeah.
That's what I was reading into it a little bit, but yeah,
Yeah.
the whole
But there's no precedence for it. Like we don't know what dragons do when their mothers die. Like like they don't have, we've never had that conversation, and I kind of feel like I also don't know how John got caught. Like they do this, there was this fade to black after this moment, and they essentially fast forward. I don't know how long. It's been long enough for Sansa and Arya to get, or Sansa, Arya's already there, but it's long enough for all of the lords and ladies of Westeros to be in the dragon pit in King's Landing and having a meeting. And it's just like, and it's summertime. It's no longer winter. So it's just like,
Yeah.
So, I mean, and given Tyrion's beard and Jon's beard, they've been in prison for quite a long time. So, one, you don't know how Jon got caught. Two, you don't know how he's still alive and why, how Grey Worm didn't just stick him on the spot. Like, did Jon confess? Did he say, like, I did it, I'm
I
done?
mean, knowing John, he probably
Probably
did.
did, yeah. But again, like, they don't show that. And you've got, there's enough time in this episode, there's enough long shots of nothing where they could have easily put in some information. I'm glad they didn't put like a title card up that said, like, 5 months later, or something
I almost
stupid.
wish they would have done that, but I know why you don't like that, but like I almost wish they had of because I don't know, I just feel like it would be it would it, I don't know, passage of time is a big issue in this
It
season,
is,
and I remember in the first couple of seasons it flowed very, very nicely, and when I went back and watched the whole thing before this episode or before the season came out, sorry, passage of time flowed really, really well in like the first 4 or 5 seasons, and then around season 6 it was getting a little bit skewed,
Well,
and
that's
then
when the
season
book
7 it
stopped.
was just gone.
Mid season five, I think, is when the books ran out. The thing that I really found troublesome about the Lord's Council, so like the one where you've got like Tyrion and Sansa and Arya and all the people around, was like the jokey moments and the part where like Sansa's uncle, who we haven't seen for like 4 seasons or something stupid, gets up and has this terrible, long, awkward speech about like I should be king is essentially where he's going. And it does nothing. It serves nothing. It's cannon fodder.
I felt like he was just kind of there to be comedy. Because I watched a video on YouTube about like just kind of the end of Game of Thrones, just to kind of wrap it all up, and it ties back into previous things. And I guess he's the oldest Tully brother. I think he's the only Tully brother actually, but he was kind of meant to be more of a comedy character. Their father, he can't shoot the arrow into the boat to set him on fire. He tries to shoot the arrow like 3 times. So he's kind of meant to be like a jokey comedy character, and it's like, hey, we gotta poke fun at you. I don't know. I think what got me the most this whole episode is just all the exposition that Tyrion had. I like Tyrion as much as the next person, but I was like, when did you become the main character? Like he was always a primary character, don't get me wrong, but like he was never where the story was centered around. He was always a plot driver. He was never like a main character. Like he wasn't a main player in the Game of Thrones. He was there to be, support while also still, taking a lot of screen time. I get like one of my favorite characters, a very, very well written character. I know he's George R. R. Martin's favorite character. Just like all of the speeches that he gave like 2 huge monologues, which again, I love Peter Dinklage and I love Tyrion, but like it felt like they didn't fit in the episode, you know what I mean? And especially the last one where he was just like, I'm a prisoner and no one should really trust me, but here's what I think. And it just felt really weird, and I wasn't sure about it at all. It just was something. I don't
No, I mean
know.
it's he becomes the voice for the writers, not a character, right? Like it becomes the we have to give some sort of justification for the decision and place that we've landed without enough. Basically, we haven't done the work in the writing room, so we're putting it all on a character to get us there. And in a speech, like in like you said. And I mean in some ways when the show started to stopped adapting books and started kind of going on its own. That's when you saw the rise of more Tyrion stuff. I don't know how much of that has to do with, contract negotiations and screen time and all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure what kind of politics go on behind, but I think like you, I agree. Even in the in not just even just not this episode, but just later seasons. As much as I like Tyrion and Peter Dinklage, I feel like there's just it was an awful lot resting on his shoulders. I get that he would have something to say, but it doesn't like why would Grey Worm, who has this guy imprisoned as a traitor, give him the floor and say, yeah, sure, we'll let you decide who gets to be the king. Like,
yeah, that didn't make any sense to me at all.
Not to mention that Grey Worm and the Unsullied have got zero stock in it as far as Westeros goes, because they're leaving. So
yeah, like, so why did they care?
Like, why do they care? Like, well, because justice. Because the script says justice. Like, if justice was the biggest thing on your mind, both Tyrion and Jon would be dead, and you and the Unsullied would be on a boat and sticking your middle finger up at the rest of Westeros. Like, it just does not add up. And
which they kind of did anyway. But like, I don't know. Well, I think we just needed some drama, and we needed to have some drama between all of the lords of Westeros, because Yara Greyjoy was very much like, no, like, we were aligned with Daenerys Targaryen and Jon betrayed us. Like,
yeah,
she was pretty much the only one who was making a lot of sense in that one, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, loyal to a fault, right? Like, loyal to a point where it's like, well, you're being blindly loyal to someone that's dead. So, like, you're really not moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Ironborn. Like, that's the whole idea that I think they're the only people that are more stubborn than the Starks. Like, I think that's their role, mm-hmm. right? Is that it's the Starks are stubborn with honor, and then the Greyjoys are stubborn without honor. Like, that's the kind of like the mold, from what I can gather. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I could have done without Tyrion being the one that kind of like explains to the audience why Bran is the right person for the job. Realistically, given how much these houses feud and how much all of them want to be on the Iron Throne, or would not say no, certainly if it was, you know, an opportunity arose, I feel like it should have been amongst them to then voice the people. You know, like, who do you guys want? Well, then 6 of them are going to say one person and 5 of them are going to say another person, and then you're going to vote, and, you know, it ends up being whoever. I think that it is extraordinarily unlikely that as one person is nominated that everybody in the circle says aye. Like, no one said no.
And Arya didn't even get a vote.
Well, because Sansa would technically be the leader of the house. And that's the other thing. Why is Arya sitting there? Like, well, I guess Bran technically would be the leader. But then Arya and Sansa are there. And so, like, Sansa's like, well, the North is staying free. And she only says that after that she realizes that Bran is going to be king. Because, like, it is weird that Arya, Sansa, and Bran are all there. Right? Because really only one of them is the head of the household. I mean, if Bran has said it can't be me, or it isn't me because I'm the three-eyed raven, then fine. And Sansa is the one that's holding that mantle. But yeah, like, Arya being there is weird too. At first I thought it was strange that Sam was there, but then I realized that with his brother and father dead, he's the head of the Tarly lands.
Yes. And Gendry wasn't even there.
Was he? I don't remember. If he was, he didn't say anything. I think he was there. Pretty sure he was there.
Was he there?
He must have been.
I don't remember.
Brienne was there too.
Brienne was there too, but I think she's, because she's...
Well, no, wait a minute. She's also not royalty, but she's from a house. Like,
she's from a house, yeah. Well, she's from Tarth.
Tarth, yeah. So maybe she represents Tarth? But is that one of the Seven Kingdoms? Like, this is where I've been so caught up in the folly of the character development this season that I have not really refreshed all of my notes have to do with like character story arcs falling flat, not like the
going not back, houses and
yeah,
things.
Not going back to the houses and remembering where everybody lives and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I know that she's from a noble house. I don't think she's from, so like each kingdom of Westeros has one leading house. And then there's other noble houses beneath it.
Right.
So, like, for example, the Riverlands, the House Tully would be the noble house, like the presiding house over that area. But House Frey is a noble house as well, just under the Tully name.
Right. Same with kind of
like
how Mormont.
like the Mormon under the Starks. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Or anything like that. So I think she's from a noble house in the Stormlands. Which is where the Baratheons would preside over.
Right, right. She's part of the Kingsguard. Like, she's a gold cloak now.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. Which is it's a fitting spot for her to land. Like, that's one of the, she's one of the few characters that where she lands, I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm happy with her. As far as like all of my favorite female characters lie, which were Brienne and Sansa, and even Arya to an extent, I'm happy with where they landed. I'm really happy that Brienne is a gold cloak. I'm really happy that she's, recognized as someone strong and powerful and not ridiculed for being a lady knight. I'm just happy that Sansa was queen. I just wanted Sansa to be queen. That's all I wanted, and she was. That's all that matters to me. And I was like, you know what? I can be good and happy about this. Oh, and John pet ghost. That was the only thing that made me cheer in the whole show. Like, I was watching with my roommate and my friend Becca, and we were like, as soon as we heard like the whine of the dog, we're like, oh, pet that dog. You better pet that dog. You pet the dog. All right, good. We can all go home. This is great. That's all
Yeah.
that we cared about.
It's
And
one of those things. I mean, people have their speculations about that being added in the last, week or two, where it was such a big
you know
stink.
what? Even if it is, I don't care.
I
It
don't think it's
happened.
possible. I think this was all shot months and months and months ago. Like I don't think that it was. But if it wasn't, like if that was in this episode and not in the other episode on purpose, like I kind of feel like they trolled them. Like I kind of feel like they trolled the internet. And when the internet lost their mind over John not petting that dog in episode four, then somebody somewhere was twiddling their thumbs going like like
Just
look
wait,
at the puppets dance. Like it's like, oh God.
yeah.
And that's the kind of thing, like if you remove the scene from episode four where John doesn't pet Ghost and we don't know that Ghost is even alive, can you imagine the emotional response to not knowing from episode three to episode six if Ghost was alive? And then when John finally gets to the wall, there's Ghost saying, "All right, let's go for a run. Like, where are we going today, man?" And like that is way more poignant and important, and gives a more of a landing to John, in the north, above the wall, than having the whole thing be like, again, like people were talking about the Starbucks cup and John not petting Ghost in that episode, as opposed to how bad the writing was. And here, people are talking more about the writing because it's the end of the show. But there's an awful lot of noise about the water bottles and John petting the dog. And it's just like, guys, you're missing
And
the point.
the ink in the
Oh,
book that's not
my
dry when Brienne's,
God. Yeah.
just
Yeah.
people losing their absolute minds about it.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny about the ink in the book is that people are focused on it, and it also serves as like this kind of underlying message is like the whole show is trying to get out of Dodge so fast that the writing is suffering, and it's the same thing as closing the book when the ink is still wet. Like it's just D&D are like putting the book on the shelf, and the whole internet's like, no, it's not done yet. It's yeah. As far as like things like the King's Council and having Davos and not Arya, Davos and Brienne and Sam and everybody, it all makes sense. Like it's the right people, they're in the right houses. Bran, again, Bran as king is weird. Tyrion as Hand makes sense. Was he not a Hand before? Was he not on the council before? I feel like he was on
He
the
was. So
council.
he was filling in for Tywin. So Tywin, when Joffrey was crowned king after Robert was
Right.
killed, was filling in as Hand of the King for Tywin,
Right.
and actually did a lot of really good things while he was Hand. And then was immediately thrust aside after the Battle of Blackwater
Right.
when his dad showed up. That's kind of when all that went down. But so he's no stranger to it, I'm sure, but
Yeah, I mean, in this, they paint it as punishment. Like he doesn't want it, so they give it to him as quote
doesn't want
unquote
it, but like I
punishment.
think at this point, like everyone's doing it for duty at this point. Like, again, even Bran doesn't want, even Sansa said, like, Bran doesn't want it. I don't think Bran ever did really did want it, but he, like, and that was the first thing my roommate said too, is like when Tyrion was like, Bran the Broken, first of all, Bran the Broken, really, that's kind of a rude name. But second of all, she was just like, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want anything. What? She was really confused. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that someone's on the throne. I'm glad it's someone who's not power hungry. I'm glad it's someone who's not, in the grand scheme of things, insane. I'm kind of glad it's not John though either. Like as much as that would have been in a perfect world, John and Daenerys would have been married and would have ruled together despite the incestual weirdness of their relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, they would have, it would have kind of been a light, nice and happy and even perfect world. If this is what we're going to get with someone who is relatively sane and not bonkers and is pretty well going to know what's going to happen, I'm okay with that. Sansa got her crown.
Yeah,
that was my one box checked. Is like, if the what will make me super happy, Sansa's queen. Great, I got that. That's at that point. By the end of this, I was like, Sansa's the only person I care about 100%.
Yeah, I liked with it. I also did like where Jon landed. Like, if he wasn't going to be king, then having him adventure north of the wall makes sense. What I didn't like is him being banished to the Night's Watch. Because, well, one, we don't need the Night's Watch because the Night King's dead. Mm. So what's the point of that? And then two, it salts the goodbyes from Jon and Sansa and Arya and Bran, like at the dock there, mm-hmm. when he's getting into the dinghy, when he's being taken away. It doesn't make any sense. Like if you can somehow convince, like everybody is supposed to be giving and everybody like giving leeway, right? But the only people that don't, or the only person that doesn't, is Grey Worm. When if you want to kind of give him even like a little bit of hope for a likable character, is that if he concedes to be like, you know, fine, we'll set everybody free if you decide to break the wheel that my queen set out to do. If they free John and John decides to go north of his own accord, then that gives a lot more validity to and happiness to his ending, even though you're not going to get a smile out of Kit Harington as John, right? Like, having John and Arya say goodbye when she can smirk at him and say, "What's west of Westeros?" And he's like, "I don't know." She's like, "Huh?" And she kind of skips off. You know, that's a fun ending in character to their relationship instead of this, even though he did the right thing and he won and he saved everybody, he's still being punished. And it just doesn't feel like it was needed because he's already had to stab the woman he loves. Like, it's not like it's penance. He's already had to pay that. Like it's these little things that I feel are so obvious to me. And I'm not a writer. I'm not an HBO producer. Like, I'm not saying that I could be, but it just feels like when these things are so obvious to someone who I consider like myself to be like an average viewer, like an average person watching this show, it kind of makes you think like, well, the brilliant minds behind the show, how come you didn't think of this? You know, and it feels weird. I like the idea.
No, I agree with you.
I like the idea of, John and Daenerys ruling together, like you said, and like in the really cool, perfect kind of like balanced world. But then, at that point, I guess Tyrion has to be Hand, right? But I always thought that Bran would make an excellent Hand, because I thought if Jon was somehow king, and if Daenerys still died, whether it was from Arya or whether she just died in battle or something, if Jon was ended up king, then Bran being Hand would also be very cool. Right, and make a lot of logistic sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they landed it, like, it just, if they're gonna go with Bran, like the way that they gave the endings, they could have just spun it a little bit different. I also really felt like Arya was sailing off into the sunset, cough cough spinoff series. Like, Westeros
has felt very
never been mentioned until just now.
No, actually, that's not true.
Oh, is it?
She mentioned it. No, yeah, she mentioned it in when she was in Braavos and she was staying with that lady who was the actor after she got stabbed by the Waif.
Oh, okay.
So remember when she was doing that training and she was supposed to kill this actress,
mm-hmm.
but she didn't. And then the other like faceless person who was like helping her train while she was blind, was tracking her down.
Yep.
And they got into that fight, and at the end of the fight, like, you know, Arya was stabbed a few times, the candle, and then kills the Waif. Then she comes back to this actress And while she's patching her up, she's talking about it. She's like, "Well, I'm from Westeros. What's west of Westeros?" So it was mentioned one time.
All right.
It's
been a long time.
But it's been
I've
a while.
It. Yeah.
And that hasn't been part of her character arc in a long time. So.
Interesting. For final thoughts, are you interested in reading the books now that we've seen this ending on HBO?
Yeah, actually I am. I know that the characters all look very different in the book, so I think that's going to be difficult for me to get my brain around. Apparently characters are easy to distinguish between in the books because they're all color-coded. According to Bethley, like everyone who's wearing purple is from a particular house. Everyone who's wearing a certain other color is from a particular house.
Yeah, he goes into great descriptions about meals, banners, you know, but and house. I mean, like the chapters are always told from the perspective of a certain person. So like instead of chapter one or two, you get like, you know, Arya or you get Sansa or whatever. So you always know kind of like whose eyes you're seeing the story through. And then if it's a new character, then they usually go through the ropes of like explaining what house they're from and stuff like that.
I would really like to, because like, there's a lot of detail.
George R. R. Martin has said that his ending would not be that different than what he is kind of put forth in the show.
Yeah.
So in the books, Bran very. I don't imagine that HBO would be any different. If they asked him and he said, "Like, look, this is who I'm planning to put on the throne," unless he's pulling a fast one on them, or he changes.
Yeah, that'd be kind of amazing, honestly.
Yeah, or if he changes his mind, then I think the people that are really solid fans of the show and the books are going to want to read the books, because the one thing that you're going to get in the books that you're not going to get in the show is the proper pacing, right? If anything, the books are going to be a little bit too long. If Daenerys is going to descend into madness, then you're going to get the proper spin out, right? In the books, you're going to get the inner monologue that you don't get in the show, right? You're going to get some other things that they might just not have had time for. I am curious to know whether Bran is the one that Martin puts on the throne. I think my biggest beef with Bran on the, I think my biggest beef with Bran on the show is that I don't remember him as the three-eyed raven in the books being this out of it. I don't remember whether that even happened in the books. Like it's been so long since I've read the books, and this show has been something that I've been so steeped in for the last few years that it all starts to get foggy, right, as to what happened when and where. But if I don't see Bran being this wooden in the books, if he's meant to be on the throne, then I feel like we're going to get more of a perspective, right? Because Bran's one of the characters. Bran's one of the characters in the books that you see the story through. And if he's an unfeeling wooden box, then that's a boring chapter, right? It's just,
yeah, no, I agree.
It might as well be in point form.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know. I don't know if it's just like the writing they did for the show or not. At this point, I'm chalking it up to the show. I'm chalking up the fact that Bran was boring as hell because of the show. That's what I'm chalking it up to.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how the books turn out. I think I will probably pick up the books and read them. My brother has the whole set. So I should just borrow them from him and see how they work and how they play out.
I remember being riveted right up through the Red Wedding in the books. And I think that's book three. Book four.
Oh, you've read them. I didn't realize you'd read them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, I had read them all before the series started. Did I read them all before? I think I might've been still reading some of the later books. Well, one of the books came out while the series was going or just before, that was book five. And that is not my favorite. It is the largest and the most confusing because it's just like, I think there was something to do with the publishing where books four and five were supposed to be one book, but it was too long. And so the publisher made him split it up.
Oh, okay.
And so he split it up in a way that book four was all the characters you know and book five was all the characters you don't. So you go into book five thinking, yeah, Game of Thrones, can't wait to see what happens with everybody. And you get nothing because it's all new people. And you're just like, what is this? And it's really confusing. But I also remember quite a lot about Davos in book five. And of course, he's one of my favorite characters in the show. Becomes a good character in the book too. But like he's so much more likable when he's interacting with like, you know, John or, you know, other people that, you know. I've definitely read the books. They're also very good audiobooks. Unfortunately, the actor that read them has passed away.
I'd love to like get an Audible subscription or something and do the audiobook, I think.
Yeah, they're worth listening to for sure. Very, very well. Very, very well read. It actually kind of makes me want to read them again. Yeah. Like it kind of makes me want to read them again. Yeah. I'm definitely interested in the books. I mean, it's going to be different showrunners. So I would be curious about a spinoff series, you know, Pirate Arya, or there's already a series of set 1,000 years before the current events in Game of Thrones, where they're talking about like the early age of Westeros and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I like fantasy stuff. I mean, HBO does good quality produced content. So, you know, I feel in part of, like part of me feels bad because I've been slamming the show, almost all season. And I want to be careful that I'm not disparaging the entire season or series. Like,
yeah. Oh no, I love the series. Yeah, I love this series a lot.
Me too. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so disappointed with how they've wrapped up this season and how I felt about the last two episodes in particular, or three, is that I've been in love with the show for so long, and it's just, I feel like they really have let me down. Like I feel disappointed, you know, in the writing and in the way that they landed it, where like they had so much potential. Like it was this huge, huge home run. And it was just like, it's going over the wall. It's almost over the wall. And then the ball hits the top of the wall and trickles back into the infield. And you're just like, really? Yeah. Son of a bitch. Like, come on.
Yeah. No, I felt the exact same way. Yeah. Like I felt very, not cheated, but you know, I was kind of just like, oh really? Okay. Yeah. Really? All right. I guess.
Cause there's been moments in the show where stuff happens and you're just kind of like, what just happened? And you're just excited and you're just like, oh my God, I can't wait for next season. Like I've had those moments with this show and I didn't even have a twinkle of like sadness or feels in this episode. Like I was not sad that it was over because it ended and I was just like, well, that's that. Like it was.
Yeah, honestly, by episode four, I think after episode four, I was like, just let it die. Mm-hmm. Just put it out of its misery already. Thank God there's only two episodes left. Like that's literally what I was thinking. And that's not something I want to think about that show. Because it's like, I will say it's one of the few shows I think that has been very, very globally well received from everybody. Mm-hmm. Has had people tuning in at airtime to watch. That doesn't happen anymore. Mm-mm. People will often just like record things or they'll watch it on Netflix or something. This is the only show that I can think of that I have actively tuned in to every single week to turn on to watch when I can, right? Mm-hmm. This series of this season, I made sure I did because I wasn't working. I didn't have to work early the next day. So like I was on it, but I got to the point where it's like, I'm not excited to watch anymore. I just need to see what happens. And so see how much deeper in the hole they can bury this thing. That's kind of what it felt like.
It's like but watching a train wreck sort of.
It is. You just can't look away.
Yeah.
But no, like I'm, you know, to at least finish up my end of things, congratulations to the cast and crew. Cause they all did, you know, a really, really great job with the script that they were given, and the work that they've done over the 8 years is fantastic. I'm actually really disappointed with all the fans who are calling, like, you know, doing a petition to remake the last season. And even like Sophie Turner is like, yo, like that's really disrespectful to everyone who worked on the show, not just the writers, but everyone. Mm-hmm. It was like sometimes like 50 days worth of night shoots. In some instances, like I know, like the Battle of Winterfell was all night shoots, the whole thing, was all night shoots. And that's hard work. Like, if you've never worked on a film set, doing a night shoot is very, very exhausting. And it's a lot of work, and it drains a lot of life out of you. But if you're making something that you hopefully enjoy, it's kind of worth it. But if people don't like it, they don't like it. Like, not everyone's going to like it you put out there. And that's just the fact of it. But to call for a whole reshoot of it, I think, is really disrespectful. Just kind of let it be, let it go.
Well, that's
enjoy just, the good moments.
That's just a symptom of the internet, though. Like, that's just the expectant little shits that think the world revolves around them. I mean, I know that I've been crapping on, the writing, or we have really, on the Citadel Cafe for the season, but I would never think to start a petition to redo it. Like, I don't have the gall to think that I deserve another season. I got what I got. Like, it's just, and there's lots of people out there. Like, the dislike was more pervasive, but there were some people that were just like, that was great. What a great ending. He petted the dog and I'm happy. And it's like, so it worked for some people, I don't know if those people, I think it's just that those people, when you've got 20 million people that are tuning in for the finale, or 19.3, then you're going to, the people that are as into it as you and I are not the majority. Like, everybody's into it. Everybody likes the show, but they're not tearing it apart. They're not, they've not read the books three times. No, that's not the majority of that 20 million people. They're in there and they're loud, right? But that's not the majority. The majority of just like, this is a wicked show that I tune into on HBO every Sunday night and it's ending tonight, so I'm going to watch. Like, they're not as invested in it. And I think one thing that's important to lay at the feet, it started with The Lord of the Rings in 2000. But between Peter Jackson's trilogy and this series, fantasy genre is cool again.
Yeah.
Which
I'm personally really excited about. Yeah. Like, I'm really happy that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, Peter Jackson's world was like orcs and monsters and all kinds of crazy shit. And then, it's Tolkien. It's not Peter Jackson's world. But like, those movies made like beasts and magic and wizards and all that kind of stuff in there. And then Game of Thrones is more of that hardcore like fantasy. And like, and dragons are just a thought. Like, they used to exist. It's mostly just politics and people in armor. Like, there's not a lot of magic going on. But then as the series kind of spun up, there starts to be more and more kind of like really cool stuff happening. But it was all grounded in, for the most part, reality. Like, even the White Walkers pretty believable, right?
Yeah. Like, they have like a realistic, beginning. They have a reason for being there.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
like, example would be the dragons. The dragons are animals. They're not magical.
Yeah.
Like, they don't appear out of a puff of smoke. Like, it was an egg, and it has some weird ethereal properties, but it's a dragon. Like, they can't explain everything. But when it's there and it's a thing in the world, it can die. Like, it bleeds. It has, it doesn't just like magically float in the air. It has to flap. Like, there's a lot of really grounded kind of fantasy elements in Game of Thrones. And I think between that and the quality of the politics and the interesting characters and the fact that everybody was gray, there wasn't like a hero and a bad guy. It was like, there's a lot of people that do a lot of bad things and people that do a lot of good things. And sometimes it's the same person. I feel like that really kind of made it relatable in a way that made the fantasy genre super cool. I don't know if anybody's done the research on this, but I feel like there's a kind of a correlation between the current rise in popularity of D&D and Game of Thrones being as popular as it was for the last 8 years.
I would definitely say so. I mean, I think because I was always really into Game of Thrones, and I think in order to get more fantasy in my life, like more of that medieval fantasy, D&D kind of filled that void when Game of Thrones was not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. But it's more of like a wacky fun for me, but it's
But there are people that are very serious about their D&D too.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say that that's going to be it for this episode of the Citadel Cafe. If you want to see links to the stuff that we talked about, you can go to thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, as I mentioned at the top. You can email us and let us know what you thought about the finale of Game of Thrones or the season at large, whatever you'd like, at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. And of course, spread the show via word of mouth, poking a friend in the arm and saying, hey, this is a really cool podcast. You should check it out. Is always really helpful. We're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff in the future. It's not just a Game of Thrones show. We switch over when the show's on, but we go back to talking about whatever we're into, whether it's the latest superhero movie. I know a couple weeks ago, Lou was really into Detective Pikachu. So we've talked about stuff like that.
Which if it's so good.
Yeah, if it's nerdy, we're probably going to talk about it on this show. And if you'd like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. That is where you can become a member, join our Discord, contribute to the community, and help make this show possible. My name is Joel Duggan. Everything that I am doing online is at joelduggan.com. I'm going to point you towards twitch.tv/joelduggan as the place to find my online content right now. I do a lot of live stuff there. It's some drawing, some Minecraft, some other video games, and there's a really, really fun, warm community to hang out with and chat with there live on the channel. So check that out over on Twitch. Megan, thanks so much for taking the time to hang out and talk Game of Thrones and get this all off of our chest.
Oh, naturally. I don't think there's anyone I'd rather talk about it than with you. So,
no. Where can people to find you online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at @omegantownsend. And if you'd like to follow my personal project, The Heir of Kelden End, that's also on Instagram too.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Two, 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 two,